This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 113. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
And you can call us on
020-88-167-691.
I'm David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Berners.
Well, Berners, it's been an exciting week for me. I've been up in Scotland watching the rainfall and generally getting used to the Scottish hospitality. What have you been up to this week?
Played a bit of cricket, talked about pitch vision, had my knuckles wrapped by illustrious leader Mr. Welsh for my comments last week about his AFL team Richmond. So he subsequently suspended my boiled egg supply and I'm currently in the doghouse. But it's all good in Camp Berners. 73 on the board last Saturday, off to a flyer and enjoying the English sun temporarily.
Making the most of the of some poor bowling, or was it just sheer skill on your part?
Little bit of both. I think a few rusty arms were running into bowl against this well-oiled machine who just pummeled them back down the ground. No, it was a good start. It was like 130 for no wicket, so first game of the season to have a partnership like that is always pretty advantageous for the old morale and confidence. So, yeah, pretty pleased.
So the team got a good chance this year of winning the title?
We think we should be playing in the World Cup.
Got a lot of talented players in your club.
Yeah, we go, okay. First team got off to a flyer. They won and then won their first national knockout game on Sunday against a team from the Isle of Wight. And the second team's won, third team won, fourth team won and fifth team won. They've got an added incentive this year because they're doing a bit of fantasy cricket, so you can pick your own team amongst those five teams. And also man of the match for each team on the Saturday gets half-price drinks at the bar. So if you're not man of the match, you do your utmost to make friends with the guy who is man of the match.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I didn't play this weekend because I was with our case study club, our Pitch Vision Academy case study club at Watsonians.
Yep, absolutely. So how did you find it up in the Highlands? Is it good structure, well organised, good standard of cricket?
Great standard of cricket. And in fact, I kept a little audio diary of what happened, which will be coming up later in the show, and some reports on the game and my thoughts on the type of cricket that they play up there. But generally speaking, yeah, I'm very impressed by the intent and the way that they approach the game. They balance out the difficult elements of playing quite a serious level of cricket, because you've got guys there who, you know, have aspirations of playing in the World Cup because they're on the cusp of the Scotland team. Some of them are in the Scotland team. And then you've got other guys who are there as much for the tea and the cakes and the post-match pint as they are making sure that they get some runs or take a few wickets. So that's a difficult balance to strike, but they seem to be doing a good job under the captaincy of former Scotland captain Craig Wright, who's been on this show before. And Craig will be on the show later on giving us his views on the game and also his views on some of the weather that I seem to have brought with me, because as soon as I arrived in the train from Edinburgh, it absolutely started chucking it down.
Coach, come on.
We've also, after training, which was wet weather training, we also managed to do some interviews with some Watsonian players. So we got some sort of views of club cricket from the men themselves, if you like. So again, we'll be having those a little bit later on the show, and that'll be quite interesting for everybody who plays club cricket any level, just to see how, doesn't really matter what level you play, everybody faces similar kind of questions and similar kinds of problems. As you already know, I was up in Edinburgh this week and I got to catch up with some of the Watsonian players as well as see a game. The first interview that we're going to have on the show is with the Watsonian club professional for the year, Tim Weston. He plays first-class cricket in New Zealand, and he comes over every year to play for Watsonian and give them a hand with their batting. So after training, we'd all dried off, and we went into the bar to perform the interviews. And here is the interview with Tim.
Okay, so for the uninitiated,
yeah,
who are you?
My name's Tim Weston. I'm a Kiwi boy. I'm play for Central Districts back in New Zealand. So yeah, this is my second year in Watsonians and over playing in the Scottish League, and yeah, it's really nice to be back for a second year.
How long have you been in professional cricket?
About 6 years. Yeah, so six full years. I kind of was lucky enough to go to university and get a degree and a teaching diploma behind me, and had a couple of years full-time teaching, and then kind of after that, cricket managed to start paying its way a little bit. So I kind of played the New Zealand summers, which are quite hectic, and then didn't play as a pro for probably 3 years, just kind of did a little bit of travel in the winter, obviously being very lucky to play pro sport. You know, it pays okay and gives you a bit of freedom as well. So I kind of did that, and then I thought, geez, you know, I'm not getting any younger, so if I'm going to use cricket as a way to travel as well, it's probably a good time. So I decided that a couple of years, well, last season.
What would you say the top three things pieces of advice you would give to someone who wants to play professionally?
Obviously, you need a massive work ethic. And cricket's a sport that tends to drive a lot of people away. No disrespect to it. You know, it's has a lot of time restrictions, you know, and it puts a lot of pressure in terms of what you can do in your everyday life. So I think if you are going to commit to it, you've got to commit to it properly, you know, and have a really good work ethic. And that's, you know, that's not just in cricket, that's in everyday life. Unless you've got that work ethic, you can have the most talent. You know, you can be physically in the best shape of your life, but unless you're willing to put the yards in, you're not going to get anywhere. So I think that's, you know, probably a massive one for me. Also perseverance as well. You know, a lot of guys, you know, might do really well in age group things, or, you know, might get into the county scene really early, or get into their first 11 really early, or their top under 15 sides. But a lot won't, you know. But I think if you look at a lot of the county players and a lot of the first class players in New Zealand, they're guys who have had to use that work ethic but also persevere. And in the end, you know, they're the ones who come out on top and generally do perform a little bit better because they've had to work hard, so they're better prepared mentally as well. And then probably the third thing I think is massive, not only in sport, in cricket as a profession, but also in any professional sport. The career lifetime, you know, of you is so short, so, you know, you really need to be proactive and get something else behind you. You know, you play with a lot of players who might play, you know, 8 to 10 years, great, that's fantastic. But there's also a lot of players that you play with, you know, that might play one, two seasons, if they're lucky, whether that be with injury or form or selection or coaches, you know, and selectors. So I think it's massive to have something else behind you, because then it means you can really go and enjoy your cricket, and then you can play, you know, you can play freely, you can really enjoy it, as opposed to worrying about what you're going to have to do, you know, come week time or at the back end of it.
Get harder to break in the older you get, because there's a balance there between getting something behind you and putting cricket to one side, professional cricket to one side, and also there's 16, 17 year olds who are all knocking on the door all at the same time. So how do you strike that balance?
Yeah, I think you raise a really good point. Something that I often look at is I look at the friends that I kind of play age group with. I played age group with McCullum, Taylor, Ryder, those sorts of guys, and they were great. You know, they were very lucky. They cracked professional cricket from an early age. But then there's also a lot of guys who go there the age of 18, 19, and break in. But because maybe they're not ready mentally and maybe they're not ready technically, you see a lot of those guys drop out kind of 22, 23, and you actually find if guys come in a little bit later, once again it goes back to that work ethic and that perseverance. They've actually dealt with the harder times and they haven't had everything on a plate, and you actually find those guys 23, 24, 25 breaking in. They actually want it that little bit more because it's something they've had to work so hard to get. And I think you actually find those guys are, you know, they do perform really well. You obviously have the people who are special players who break in from an early age, and that's great. But also, you play with, I've played with a lot of those guys who get the end of their career, and they might have made, you know, a reasonable amount of money playing county or first class cricket, but they've also got 2 to 3 years without a, you know, without a really solid income that they're going to have to deal with, and at that time they've more often got kids or family. So it is, you know, you never want to give away your dream of playing professional sport, but I think if you're proactive, you can study, you can do all these things, you can do apprenticeships while you're actually doing that in your off seasons, and it might take you 4 or 5 years to actually get those degrees or apprenticeships behind you, but then you can play, as I said, you can play without that stress and that drama.
So what did happen in Edinburgh on Saturday afternoon when Watsonian took on local rivals Grange in a 50-over competition? Well, I kept an audio diary of the day, and here is exactly what happened as it happened.
So as the day progresses, I'm going to give you little audio updates on what's going on with the game and maybe some ideas that you can take for your own cricket club. Just watching the Watsonian boys go through their cricket skills warm up, a little bit of throwing, a little bit of underarm, a little bit of picking up. And this is a important match for the Watsonian team. They're almost at full strength, just missing one key player who's away at university. And Grange were last year's champions, so an early season win here can really put the boys in good stead for the rest of the summer. It's just after 1 o'clock and I'm just watching the first over be bowled by Watsonians, who won the toss and elected to chase in this 50 over limited over competition. A couple of things I've noticed already: the 15 over fielding restrictions. We have to have everyone except two players inside the 30 metre fielding circle. That's the first 15 overs. And the second thing that I've noticed is that the fielders are all throwing the ball back to the wicketkeeper in the modern way that many professional sides do. It's an excellent wicket because Scotland play their home games on this ground, so it's well looked after. We're expecting a high scoring match. Field for the first over, two slips, a backward point, cover, mid off, mid on, square leg, fine leg in a third man. And the opening bowlers both bowling at brisk, medium pace. So we're 20 overs into the match. The wind's got up a little bit, but the weather is still fair. Score is 63 and the Grange batsmen have been in a little bit of trouble. It's been doing a little bit, a bit of extra bounce, and apart from one poor over, Sonians have really looked like the better side so far. There's been a couple of poor balls, but generally the bowling's been accurate and brisk. And now the Grange batsmen are really looking to hit a little bit over the top to try and pick up some runs. Pick of bowling so far has definitely been Paddy Sadler, who's bowled 10 overs from the pavilion end unchanged, and he's bowled with pace and accuracy throughout, not giving away many runs. And he's been unlucky not to have more in the wickets column. Currently left on seamer Mike Leggett is bowling, and he is forcing the batsman onto the back foot, making it difficult for them to score. And in this 50 over format, which is limited overs, that's exactly what you need to do. Now we're getting to the exciting stage of the innings, where Grange are in their last 10, and with the score on 159, the game is somewhat in the balance. The pitch is good, so it's a key stage of the match. It's about 6:15 now, and unfortunately the rain came at tea. Grange were bowled out in the last over for 211 in a little collapse. They were looking at one point to be getting more than 220, perhaps even up to 230 at one point, but they lost a flurry of wickets and got bowled out in the last over for 211. Then the rain came, and we had to wait for that to clear away, and it's finally cleared away. We're going to restart at 6:26. That's very important. It's 26 minutes past, not 25 past, not half past, 26 minutes past. We're going to have a 26 over match, and the Duckworth Lewis calculated target is 151. The game's over now, and I've retired to the pavilion while the Watsonian boys get changed. They're pretty gutted by the result, which ended in a loss by 12 runs in the end. Duckworth Lewis adjusted, as you remember. I spent the innings sitting with the Watsonian batsmen and trying to be as diplomatic as possible, but unfortunately they collapsed fairly spectacularly after a good start, and lost some wickets to some quite soft dismissals. I'm not quite sure what it was down to, whether the pressure of waiting around and then having to score at almost six and over got to them a little bit, or whether it was just a little bit of a moment. It's hard to say, and maybe that's something that we'll look at in a little bit more detail another time. But at the moment, it's all very disappointing. I've just spoken to Craig Wright, the captain, who very politely declined the chance to have an interview, but don't worry, I'll be catching up with him later in the week, and you'll be able to hear the interview with him on the podcast a little bit later in the show. So that's all for now from Edinburgh. Let's get back to the podcast.
We're going to interrupt our Watsonian case study extravaganza now to bring in the regular feature of the listeners' questions. And remember that you can enter your questions into us and win a prize, which is a coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. We've got some questions this week, and Berners, I understand you've picked out some slightly different questions this week to just mix things up a little bit.
I have indeed. We got some interesting queries about some of the rules and regulations of the game here. So we'll kick off with True Mana, who's asking, can you be out if the ball only strikes your arm guard above the wrist, but your arm guard is tucked into or is touching your glove and the hand in that glove is holding the bat? This would help resolve a major dispute. So it sounds like it's handbags at five paces here. But I think what we can grasp is that the arm guard's attached to the glove, the glove's attached to the bat, and what's the outcome there, Coach?
Yeah, well, interesting question. Does that, because they're touching, does that mean that they count or not? Well, I looked it up. I'm not going to lie, I didn't know the answer to this. I dusted off my copy of Tom Smith's Cricket Umpiring and Scoring Book, and it says in there that the arm guard doesn't count. The reason why is that it only goes up as far as the wristband. So if it hits your wristband of your glove, that counts as the glove, if your glove's got a wristband. Most of them have these days, but as long as you're holding the bat. But if the arm guard is touching the glove, that doesn't count, so that's not out. Although it would take a pretty sharp umpire to pick up the difference between the two if it's that close together. You have to be lucky to get a sharp umpires at club level, because sometimes the guys can barely make it out onto the pitch. They do sterling work for very little money, but it does mean sometimes that club umpire standards can be a little bit low. So good luck if you hit on the arm guard, that's all I can say.
As the old saying goes, pay peanuts, get monkeys.
Yeah, well, exactly. And considering the standard of the cricket that I've played in, sometimes I can't really complain about the standard of the umpiring not being world class either.
Moving on, we've got one from Roger Walner here, who's got quite an interesting summary here. He's actually got us in a scenario, so I'll just read this one out. Imagine the following situation. The batsman strikes the ball and attempts a run. A fielder fields the ball, throws it towards the stumps and successfully puts down the wicket. Although the batsman has already completed the run, now the batsmen go for the second run.
Mm-hmm.
What does the fielding side need to do to run the batsman out if, point A, the first throw had only dislodged one bell?
Mm-hmm.
Can they run the batsman out by dislodging the other bell,
mm-hmm.
either with a direct hit or otherwise? Point B, the first throw had dislodged both bells,
yeah.
leaving one or more stumps in place. I believe the fielder has to uproot the stump with the ball in hand, which I think he's correct with there. Point C, the first throw had completely uprooted all three stumps. Does the fielding side need to reset the stump before uprooting it with the ball in hand again?
Yeah, okay, yeah, well, that's a very unusual circumstance. So it's all to do with what counts as the wicket being put down. In the first instance, where one bale is off and one bale is on, then yes, all you need to do is remove the other bale, and that's enough to put the wicket down. So if the batsman is out of his ground, that's out. If both bales are off, you've got a choice. You can throw the ball at the stumps, knocking one of the stumps or more of the stumps out of the ground. You can hit the stump out of the ground with the ball or your arm holding the ball. Or you can, which is a common one, you can hold the ball and the stump in one hand and pull the stump out of the ground. That counts as well. Also, if both bales are off, if you've got time, you can put one of the bales back on and knock it off again. That is fine as well. So that leads us to the third one, which is the stumps are spread-eagled. I don't know if I've ever seen this. Have you ever seen that, Bonus? All three stumps out of the ground?
I've seen some fat galah fall into the stumps around, but that's one hell of a throw or whatever.
Yeah.
You often see the keeper kind of make a mess of it, don't you, and collapse all three stumps. So I guess it is possible.
It is possible, absolutely. And if it does happen, then yes, you'll have to rebuild the stumps to some extent. So the quickest way to do it would put the stump in the ground and then pull it out of the ground again with the ball in the same hand, or knock it out of the ground with the ball.
Oh, so I guess in theory you could run to the stumps, yeah. knock them out of the ground, throw one to your mate at cover, and then just put the ball to it then. It has to have a point of reference, right? So you have to take it out of the hole it was in.
Yeah, exactly. So you have to put at least one stump back in to take it back out again. Which probably means he's going to make his ground unless he is literally lying on the floor crawling or something like that. So I can't see that happening.
Yeah. Okay, and finally, a question from Kartik, who wants to know, is it an overthrow when the ball thrown by the wicketkeeper hits the batsman after hitting the stumps?
Well, technically, they can run again. I mean, there's nothing to stop them running again. There is a tradition that's grown up that if the ball hits the batsman, everybody just stops and we all just consider it a dead ball and we don't carry on. But I mean, if you wanted to, if it was the last ball of a match, say, and you needed one to win, then there wouldn't be anything stopping you from taking that extra run if you were the batsman.
It's a bit unsporting.
Well, it's very unsporting, isn't it? But you know, that's you know.
Oh, let's do it.
So is that all the umpiring questions, Bernice?
Yes, mate.
So have we got any coaching ones this week?
We do. Okay, we've got a question here from Adam Cleverly, who looks like he's a big fan of yours, coach. You've helped him in the past, and he's taken on board quite a few of your shows. He's just written in. He's having a bit of a problem. New season started. He was elected to open the batting with a view to seeing off the new ball, and he's saying how the show helped him a lot with that, with the technique, and unfortunately didn't quite get the results that he was looking for. The team often struggled to post a decent score and also chase down scores. So during the winter, they thought they'll turn their arm to a bit of indoor cricket, you know, get the eye in, possibly help them as they start the new season. But it looks like that's all backfired as well now, because as Adam mentions here, he struggled the first couple of games here, getting out after only four balls on three occasions now. And he feels like there's something not quite right with his technique. He's saying that he never hardly gets bowled in games or in nets, and now he feels a bit like a kind of rabbit in headlights syndrome, where he's all at sea. So he's just looking for a bit of advice. He's also got the Gary Palmer batting course, which he's saying has been a great help, but he wants some ideas.
Yeah, but it's quite common, that thing where, you know, you kind of standing there thinking, how am I going to get any runs? You suddenly lose that confidence in yourself that you're going to score any runs. And I think from Adam's background, because I do remember him, he hasn't scored a lot of runs in outdoor cricket. He's done reasonably well in indoor cricket, but he's not scored that well in outdoor cricket. So he hasn't really got that well of experience to draw from. So then you start getting pulled into what is the way to score, and you don't really have that. You can't fall back onto your traditional ways of scoring. So you wonder if your technique isn't good enough, and then you start getting, you know, you start getting nervous of the ball and all the rest of it. So it is sort of an ever decreasing circle of mental and technical. Now, I haven't seen Adam bat, but I'm pretty sure that he's going to have some technical flaws. Even the best batsmen do. So there's not really much we can do about that. All you can really do is practice, but you can work on the mental side of the game. And one really good way to do that is if you can kind of mix it up with net practice a little bit. There's a product in Pitch Vision Academy, which is for batsmen, uses some audio which you can play while you're in the nets to simulate an innings. And what happens with a lot of batsmen is, because they're not in the rhythm of an innings, because batting in the nets is different from batting in the middle, they kind of are not used to that rhythm of batting and then waiting for the next ball and then batting and then waiting for the next ball, and you're standing in a big field and it all becomes a bit overwhelming. So Batex is a great way to convert ordinary nets into something a little bit more realistic. It needs to be well organized, which may be a limitation. It works best with bowling machine or throwdowns, but you can do it with bowlers. So yeah, you probably need a bit of backing from the captain or the coach if you've got one to help you out with it. But yeah, it just plays a tape and tells you how many runs you have to score in each over, and then plays a sound every time a ball needs to be bowled. So you get in the rhythm of playing your shot, deciding whether to run or not, then running, then waiting for the next delivery. So that's quite a good way to sort of bridge the gap, if you like, between the practice side of things, the technical side of things, the mental side of things, to quite a large extent, the fitness side of things. So have a look at Pitch Vision Academy, pitchvision.com/academy for more details about getting hold of Batex. And that should give you a good sort of simple solution to that problem. The other thing you can do is play in less important games. A good example might be, say, a midweek match. If you're playing a 20 over match in midweek, it's a bit of a slog, it doesn't really matter whether you get out or not, then you can get used to that rhythm of batting and get used to playing a few shots and sort of freeze your mentality from, instead of thinking, oh my god, where am I going to score, you just have to get on with it. So you know what shots you've got, you know what shots you haven't got, and then you just got get on with it. It's not always going to be pretty, but one of the signs of a good batsman is they don't necessarily have to score pretty to score hundreds. They just get on with it and they just bat and face each ball as it comes. So it's probably a little bit technical. Let me rephrase that. It's definitely going to be technical. Everybody has technical flaws. But it's how you, the mental side of the game is how you manage those flaws and which shots you choose to play and which shots you decide not to play, and how much you practice, really, and what type of practice that you have. Batex is a good example. Middle practice is a good example. And playing in a bit, you know, knockabout games. You know, if your local pub plays in a midweek league and it's 16-8 ball overs, get amongst it. That's all I say.
Absolutely. Roll your sleeves up and get in the trenches.
Yeah, precisely. So hopefully that helps you out, Adam. I know you're very passionate about your cricket. I do remember you from last time. So it's quite a simple answer, really, but it's not an easy answer. Practice in the right way and practice a lot. Watsonian Cricket Club are the adopted side of Pitch Vision Academy this year, and Craig Wright is the captain. I managed to meet Craig when I went up to Edinburgh last week and watched the game. And for those of you listening on the podcast, you already know my views as an outsider. So, Craig, it was good to meet you. How did you think the game went on Saturday?
Well, we're obviously disappointed with the result. Obviously, it was a weather affected game. But yeah, I think there was aspects of the game that we could have done better, which might have brought us a victory. There was probably a little bit of movement in the wicket early on, which is why we won the toss and bowled, and we probably didn't quite get enough balls in the right area to pick up the wickets that we should have done with the new ball. Probably fought back reasonably well to keep to 210, and then obviously the rain meant that we were set 150 odd, I think, was it, off 26 overs, and we didn't quite bat well enough to get those. We got ourselves into a good position at sort of 50 for one, I think it was, and then lost a sort of clutch of wickets which set us back a little bit. So yeah, probably things both on the batting and bowling side that we could have done better that would have brought us a win rather than a defeat.
Well, let's start with some of the positives, though. There was some good bowling on a track that was difficult to bat on early on, I thought. What would you say the bowling highlights and the fielding highlights were for you?
Well, I think we bowled, and it's probably true of both the games that we've played. We bowled a lot of good stuff, but probably not just quite enough. Quite as much as we would like to. But I think certainly Paddy Sadler coming back into the team and bowling his 10 over straight through. I think he bowled his 10 over straight through, took one for 24 or something like that. So he bowled well. Probably what we'll target in terms of improvement for next game is just sort of upping our consistency a little bit from where we've been in the first two games. But I thought our fielding was pretty good. I mean, we dropped a catch second ball of the game, which never helps. But I think in general our fielding was better, and we've been doing a fair bit of work on that over the last couple of weeks, and I think that's paying dividends. So, you know, certainly positives from the bowling and fielding point of view.
What can you do as captain to try and get the bowlers a bit more consistent?
Well, I mean, we've been practicing. You know, they've been practicing. Bowling in the centre over the last few weeks, practicing hitting their areas, and we've spoke a little bit about sort of mental disciplines as well. In terms of the sort of concentration element of making sure you're concentrating for six balls out of six, because I think we're probably around about, you know, four good balls in the over at the moment, and maybe one or two loose ones, and that's what where we're getting punished. But you know, the guys are putting in the work, they're putting in the effort during the week, and they will do again this week, and you know, hopefully it's just a little bit of early season rustiness that we'll get past, and I think we've got the potential to be a pretty formidable bowling unit.
And the batting was interesting to me. It's the first time I've seen Duckworth Lewis used in a club game, and it was a challenging target. I think it was 151, wasn't it, off 26 overs, which was a challenging target to get. Do you think that it was inexperience of chasing a total like that over, you know, 26 overs that caused the problems?
Possibly to an extent, but I wouldn't use that as an excuse. I think we're a strong enough batting side to be able to chase that target. You know, we play a 20 over competition, and you know, sort of 130, 140, 150 off 20 overs is not an unusual score. So you know, we have experience of doing that. I think certainly my own feeling about Duckworth Lewis is that it's designed for professional cricket rather than for club cricket. And I think, you know, you would normally say that club teams would have less batting depth than a sort of professional team. So I think it's slightly skewed towards the professional game, Duckworth Lewis. But that's not to say that we didn't feel we should have chased the runs on Saturday, especially from getting into you know, a fairly strong position at sort of 50 odd for one. I think we had a couple of soft, fairly soft dismissals, myself included, and we lost sort of three quite quick wickets, and that set us back and just left us with a little bit too much to do. So, you know, I don't think we'd make any excuses. I think you know, we would say that we would back ourselves to chase that score, but unfortunately we didn't on this occasion.
Well, it was excellent to see a Premier League club side in action. I can't remember the last time I watched a whole game of club cricket, virtually every ball, without actually being part of the match. So it was good for me to see how a side do things and how you prepare and how you go about doing things. And a lot of the time, it's no different to any other club side. It's just sometimes things don't go according to plan, but I suppose that's the same for every team in the world, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, and I think cricket's not rocket science. I think cricket's a game that people complicate an awful lot where there's not really any need to practice is practice, and it can be fairly simple but fairly effective. And it's just about scoring runs and taking wickets, and it doesn't matter what and fielding well, and it doesn't matter what level you're playing at. It's essentially the same game. It's just about performing those basic skills as well as you possibly can. And as I said, we didn't just quite do that well enough over the course of the game on Saturday to get a victory. But it was good to see you. It was just a little bit of a shame you didn't get to see us practicing on Thursday, but you got to see our football skills.
Yes.
Our football skills, maybe skills in inverted commas there.
Yes, and I've got the very exciting left-handed throwing challenge on video here, which I'm going to be putting up on the website for everybody to see. So that'll be a nice little way to finish off my visit to Edinburgh, I think. So thank you very much, Craig, and I'm sure I'll be back soon to catch up with you again.
Yeah, hope so.
That's all we've got time for on our case study special this week. And Berners, a little bit earlier in the show, we had a few questions from a few people with regards to umpiring and one coaching question. So we need to decide on a winner of a Pitch Vision Academy coaching course this week. And you can find out more about those online coaching courses at pitchvision.com/academy. You can get videos and articles, audio content, lots of exciting flash-based interactive stuff, all on our website at pitchvision.com/academy. So, Berners, we're giving one of those away this week. Which question tickled your fancy the most?
I think we'll go with Super Adam. He seems like he's applying our framework, and anyone that's a big lover of Pitch Vision, I repay that faith and love in them. So we'll give it to Adski.
Yeah, get in touch with us and we'll get you a course to improve your game even further. If you want to improve your own game, then you can do that courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy by sending in a question. And if your question gets on the show and Berners picks you out, I'm sure he's open to blatant bribery, drinks at the bar, all that kind of thing, then you can win a prize, an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. So, Berners, if somebody wanted to get in touch with us, what are the contact details?
Just to add to that, golden blank checks go down quite well as well these days.
Blank checks, yeah.
Just let me in the vault. Yeah, you can drop us an email. It's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com. Or alternatively, give us a call on 020-88-167-691.
You can get us on Twitter. We are at PV Cricket Coach, and I know you only get 140 characters to ask your question on there, so it's not always the best way to do it, but if you can do it in 140 characters, please do so. I did get a question this week which we couldn't use in the show because it was something along the lines of, please give me a complete guide to fitness and nutrition for cricket. Well, I'm not going to be able to fit that into 140 characters, so I sent him a link to our complete guides to fitness and nutrition for cricket, which are available on the website. So I do have one request with regards to your questions, and if that is that, please be as specific as you can. I would rather read through an extremely long email with too much information in it than just have a general question like, please help me with my batting. We are also on Facebook, and if you do a search for Pitch Vision Academy on Facebook, you can find us on there. We're very friendly and very welcoming to your questions, comments, thoughts and ideas. but that's it next week. So until next time, we'll see you again.